ourselves and our problems, that they will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And then tonight we have Hero S from Long Beach, California, and I'll go ahead and hand it off to him now.
Thank you so much, Dustin. My name is Hero, and I am an alcoholic. I'm so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful to be sober. And thank you, Billy, for asking me to come and speak. And thank you, Dustin, for that introduction. And what a strange time that we could be 3,000 miles away. And it looks like we got some folks from Washington as well. So we could be in several states, just far flung from each other in little tiny squares on a screen. And I don't know. It's this the last what is it now? 16 months, 17 months have been extraordinarily strange, and it's just been so bizarre. But I should tell you a few things. I have a sobriety date. It's November 12th, 2007, and that's the day that a higher power that I didn't believe in, had no time for, was terrified of, running away from, I knew was after me, separated me from King Alcohol and his little buddies. And I'm really grateful for that. I have a sponsor. His name is Bob D. And I know that a bunch of us on here in his sponsorship line. And man, I missed being there with you, Alan, with all the other sobriety brothers and sisters, and the entire family. I heard there were like over 150 people there, and man, I was just so jealous. I just actually, right before this, I got off of a Zoom for the founder of my home group, Johnny Harrison, and he just took 60 years. And what's ridiculous is that I still have no idea what and who God is. And if I think about it too much, I'll confuse myself. I'll think myself into disbelief, or I think myself into confusion, or think myself into some sort of arrogance that somehow I can define or contain or describe this power with adequacy. And the weird thing about this past year is so much stuff has happened and one of the things that if you told me that we were going to be I was going to be living in a little biodome sober and doing all these meetings online, and I would have told you, well, that sounds strange, but that sounds okay. But then on top of that, like the first 11 weeks of COVID, when I was doing so many meetings, I just fell in love with the Zoom AA, being able to go anywhere in the world and seeing my dear friend Yuko P from PG, who's, you know, made in Japan like me, but she was raised there, so she still speaks English with a little bit of an accent, like my parents did before they passed, and now she's got like two Zoom meetings that in Japan, but you know, it's on Zoom, so and she's sponsoring over 100 women on there, and which is amazing, and because women in AA in Japan is just so tiny, and all this amazing stuff, and it's just so epic, but I'm one of the like small few that get Zoom fatigue so badly that the first 11 weeks of COVID I was throwing up every week from migraines, losing 1 to 3 days of work a week. And you know, it's probably because I was putting in like, you know, 40 to 60 hours on Zoom every week. And you know, like my sponsor says, you know, like sitting is the new smoking. And so it was like, you know, being a teenage drinker again. You know, I'm just overshooting the mark on Zoom. And and if you'd have told me that I was gonna stay sober during a global pandemic, go to Zoom meetings, and then read a crazy amount of theology and philosophy, which ends up transforming my life, and I never would have believed it. But just today, I was reading some stuff that nobody ever reads. It's a French philosopher, Jacques Derrida. Who's the father of deconstruction. He's talking about, as an atheist, talking about God. And he looks at God as the impossible. And when I was thinking about the impossible, I was thinking, oh my God, this Zoom is filled with people who understand the impossible. This Zoom is, the fact that the founder of my home group, 60 years sober, that sounds insane. Or that when Clancy passed last year with so many years under his belt, oh my God. And the fact that that this program was created. Like, this is Founders Weekend. This program was created in 1935, and it still continues today. Thanks to these traditions that I didn't care about when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't care about why it is that the greatest utopian movement of the 20th and 21st century continues to exist today. And when I think about the possibility of the impossible, when I think about the things that are beyond conception, when I think about when I try to wrap my mind around things that by their very nature cannot be mind wrapped, things like God, things like sobriety, things like fellowship, things like connection to people that, like, on the Zoom that I've never like pressed the flesh with and given a hug to and yet feel oddly connected to. To think about all of this and this would have been impossible, inconceivable, and so strange to me as a kid. But I wanted the impossible. I mean, I wanted the impossible as a kid. I mean, that's why I just lived in fantasy most of my childhood was living in fantasy, except when reality would like slam me in the face. And when reality slammed me in the face, you know, for a kid like me, what happens when I leave fantasy, which happens anytime I got to clean my room, which happens anytime, like, I got to go to the bathroom, which happens it happens over and over. Like, my fantasies are interrupted with regularity. And when that happens, then I'm confronted with the smallness of me, how I don't live up to my own fantasy of me, how reality doesn't live up to my fantasy of reality, how it's impossible to have the life that I kind of want. It's how it's impossible to live the life I want. It's impossible for me to even feel like a modicum of okay, confronted with reality. And that's because I don't know, my earliest memories, my head is telling me how much I'm falling short or how great I'm doing. I don't know, it's always one extreme or another. And I don't know, I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that I was made in Japan. I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that prior to the age of seven, we didn't grow up around other Asian families. I don't think it has anything to do with, you know, like 1971 and 1972 in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, for first and second grade. I don't think it had anything to do with these things, but these things did confront me with a vision of reality and a vision of myself that I didn't want and I didn't like. And it gave me these perhaps struggles unique to me, but struggles that I think that are common to human beings about how do I fit in? How do I deal with the fact that I don't feel like I don't fit in? How do I deal with the fact that I'm so different? I feel so different from other people. And the solution that I found, of course, was alcohol. I mean, that's why we're here, right? Because we love alcohol. Well, that's the secondary reason that we're here. It's the reason I'm here is that I crave the impossible. In other words, I want to feel good all the time. I want to feel good all the time, all the time, all the time. I want to feel good. And the problem with feeling good is that once you feel good, I want to feel better. And once I feel better, I want to feel better than that. I'm a peak experience guy. And I don't even understand that if all you have is peak experiences, it's a flat line. No, there's nothing better than that. And that's horrible. And there's this one rock and roll star that I like, just bizarre individual. And one of his friends came into his London flat in the late 70s and he had covered the very last inch of his body with a tattoo. Like, he covered, like, that was, a, I don't know, it was a spot on his big toe or something. I don't know, but he just covered the last spot in his body. And because he was a tattoo addict. And Genesis says to him, well, now what are you going to do if you want another tattoo? And just completely screwed up his day. And I completely identify with that. I'm like, because I just want more. But what happens when you have more than you can have? What happens when you get to that point? Oh man, that's a good day to die. That's a good day to, like, to again seek the impossible. And I don't understand. I don't understand how it is that when I have peak experiences that I'm gonna have, it's natural that as I start coming down, anywhere down from a peak experience feels like a depression. It's one of the reasons why, like, I just heard Sharon C from Pacific Group. She was speaking, one of the speakers for Johnny's 60th birthday. And one of the things I love about Sharon is, like, when she closes down the State Line retreat and when she's the closing speaker, she always says something along the lines of, you know, now it's wheels down now. It's wheels down. Like, now what we get to do, we've been here, like, all high on this experience, like, with having fellowship, having all these amazing speakers and just getting high on Alcoholics Anonymous, like we love doing. And when she says wheels down, I know what she's talking about. She's talking about the second half of that 12 step. She's talking about going back home, going back to mundane reality, going back to just like the fantasy's over. Now I've got to go to work. Now I've got to deal with stupid people on the freeway. Now I've got to deal with like just the drive back across state lines. I got to deal with all this, like the police that might, like, I got to drive slower. And I don't know, all these worries that I didn't have while I was there at the conference. Because the only thing I'm worried about at the conference is looking good and being on time. So, and you know, being able to thank the speaker before the next speaker comes on. And I understand what she means. What she means is she's talking about what different spiritual people that I really, really enjoy talk about. Like, there's a John Shia or Shea, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. He has a book called Returning from Camino that's on my to be read shelf, and it's about, you know, going on that gigantic pilgrimage in Spain and talking about like when you come back from a pilgrimage, it's really easy to get depressed. Like I want the high of AA to last all the time, and it doesn't, and it can't. And so as a peak experience guy, as a hedonist, as a person who wants pleasure all the time and pain never, the problem with having pleasure all the time is I get a little thing like a hangnail and it feels like a freaking disaster. It feels like, oh my God, what am I gonna do now? And there's another one of my teachers that I love. There's a book that you don't have to read. You just have to know that it exists. It's a book called After the Ecstasy, the Laundry. After the Ecstasy, the Laundry. And this is a phrase that I don't even understand on my own power. I need Alcoholics Anonymous for me to understand it. And what it is, it's a book by this Buddhist priest, Buddhist monk named Jack Kornfield, born Jewish, and a clinical psychologist, and the person who brought insight meditation to the U.S. He's up in Northern California, and he's talking about it's a book of case studies of all of these Buddhists who went up to the mountain and had enlightenment experiences, and they come down off the mountain and they fall into a severe depression. This is something I knew. This is something I knew about immediately when I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. Hell, this is something I knew about even before. Then when I would be absorbed in, I don't know, the Lord of the Rings or some science fiction story when I'm, you know, in grade school, and I would have to wake up and I would have to like go take out the garbage and like, oh my God, this is horrible. I want to hang out with hobbits all day. And so I completely understand it. And his solution, the solution that John Shia talks about when you come back from a pilgrimage, like in Spain, the solution is, well, how do we get sober? How do we reach enlightenment? How do we do all this stuff? We do all this stuff by having and keeping a commitment. And I don't know how to do this on my own power. It just seems like a hassle. It seems annoying. How do you reach enlightenment? By chopping wood, carrying water, by doing this every single day. What do you do after you reach enlightenment? You chop wood, carry water. It sounds so freaking mundane. I don't want that to be the solution. I want the solution to be high all the time, drunk all the time. The French poet Charles Baudelaire talks about, he has a poem that's translated as "Be drunken always." Or there's that song from mid-century by the band leader Louis Jordan, and it's a, you know, what's the use of getting sober if I'm gonna get drunk again? I mean, I fell in love with that song at the age of 14. I understood that song, and the problem is that. Once I have my solution, whatever it is, once I have a solution, I have a vacation for me. And what I mean by a vacation for me is, you know, when I'm walking around, I'm rubbing up against myself, and it's not the good kind of rubbing up against myself. It's not like self-pleasure. It's just self-irritation. I'm just irritated by me, and I'm covered in me, and I smell like me, and I taste like, oh, I can't get away from me. And nothing that I'm doing is working. I want to read a book. I can't read a book because I'm here. And I want to watch it. I want to just binge watch a show, and I can't binge watch a show because I keep thinking about me, because I keep interrupting myself trying to enjoy the damn show. And what do I do? What do I do in a situation like that when nothing else will work? And when people say prayer, I'm like, oh, get the hell out of it. Come on. No, I don't want prayer. I don't want prayer. I don't want the steps. I don't want a chore. I don't want, and all I have is I. And I'm just so sick of I, and I am so sick of me. One of the things I realized recently is that James Strachey, the guy who translated all of Freud and the complete standard edition of Freud, The ego. Freud wrote in like plain German, and most people don't read German. I picked up a little bit on Duolingo this past year because, you know, COVID. Like, what are you going to do during COVID? You're going to like learn some languages, like read some philosophy and some theology, do a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous, and do my business online. And so when Freud was writing about the ego, and we talk a lot about the alcoholic ego here in Alcoholics Anonymous, What he wrote was das ich, I-C-H, the me, the I. And you know, Strachey wanted it to sound like all scientific, so he called it the ego. But no, he's talking about the me. That's the problem. The me that tries to get. I want everything to line up with me, and the problem with that is then I'm just covered in me, it's awful. I remember that first drink. I remember being, you know, just being 12 years old and being after school in the science fiction book club. And this is, we were in California by the time we moved to California right before third grade. By junior high, all of a sudden, you know, that Tuscaloosa accent had rubbed off on me finally, you know, but it comes right back on when I hop on a Zoom, you know, in Virginia, for instance, and I finally remember, oh my God, the word hi really does have three syllables, you know, like hi. But here I am in Southern California, and it's middle school, it's junior high, and I'm hanging out after school in the science fiction book club, because that's how cool I am. That's how I roll. This is 1977. Also, this is long before like San Diego Comic-Con had, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. This is when, you know, like comic books were just patently uncool. And I'm hanging out with my buddy Dave, and he's already hit 6'4". He's hit puberty. Puberty's come and gone. It's in the real rearview mirror. And he's looking at me, and he's like, oh my God, I think you're anxious. And I'm like, that's the word for how I feel all the time. I feel anxious. And he's like, I have the solution for that. And I want to know what it is. And he says, I'll get you some of that solution. Just meet me on the north side of campus, on the other side of that bamboo field, tomorrow morning before assembly, and I'll get you what you need. And I am there, like, I intuitively know what to do, because it's like an AA meeting. I'm there 20 minutes early. There's only one other participant. It's my friend Dave. He's going to show up with what I need, but I'm there early. And so, you know, I'm the greeter. And Dave gets there, and he gives me some very simple instructions, and I just follow him to the T. He shows me how to drink these tall boys real fast and smoke these funny green cigarettes real slow. And my idea of a good time before this is, I don't know, memorizing pi for another 10 digits, or sneaking out on a Friday night with my little Spock ears to go to the Star Trek convention. And here I am, I'm having a new experience. I'm having a hard time walking, and I can't stop laughing. I'm going, oh my God, this is the best thing ever, except I hadn't hit puberty yet, so my voice was probably cracking. I can't wait to go to algebra. Little did I know that algebra would kind of take a little bit of a nosedive later on as I continued to pursue my passions. And I instantly became an evangelist for King Alcohol's Little Buddies. Because